Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Hey, thank all you wonderful Blood River Radio people. Like we said in the first hour, in case you're just tuning in, we're dedicating this show to all of our precious, precious donors. We could not make it without our donors. We surely couldn't. I think I just messed up my laptop. I'm not sure, but pounding the desk. But anyway, while we're going in the second hour now, can you hear me, Rob? Am I dead?
Can you hear me?
Good.
Oh, but good. Okay. So we're bringing on. Jason Robb, attorney at law. He's going to bring us. He's going to join me and Mark. I was pounding the desk and the lights on my computer went down. I said, "Oh Lord, I didn't hit this desk too hard and messed up my laptop." But anyway, we're bringing Jason Robb on, and he's going to break down that court case in Georgia that I think last week these three father and son and one of their friends was convicted of first degree murder. And Mr. Buddy told me that the third guy who was convicted was just there filming what went down. He didn't do anything, didn't have a gun, didn't participate in the fight at all, but he was convicted of about four different kinds of murder. So how are you doing tonight, Mr. Jason?
I'm doing great. I've been enjoying listening to your first hour, and it was really exciting to listen to the show. And every Saturday, I think it just gets better and better.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm about to send you another donation, man. Yes, sir. By the way, you make me look good. You really do. And I just love you to death. This guy's like he's like a son to me. We connected instantly as soon as we met. He's a good man. I got to brag on you a little bit. The man's got five kids, and I can hardly ever get him. The only time he's not in court, if you can't get him, if he's not in court, you know he's with his kids. He eats, sleeps, and breathes, and lives for his family. I don't know anybody like that that can beat you like that. He's just rock solid. I said, this is like a son. Matter of fact, he's younger than my youngest child. My youngest daughter's only just 51 years old. But he's also a great attorney. He has a thriving practice. That's why I can never get in touch with him. He's forever in court. So if you need a lawyer, a top flight lawyer, even if he doesn't have license to practice where you are, I'm sure he can give you advice on who to find a good attorney. But anyway, I guess I'll just bring you – I told the people what you're going to be talking tonight. You have studied up on that case that went down in Georgia. So go ahead and tell us all about that, Mr. Jason.
Well, I mean, most people are probably familiar with the case out of Georgia, the Ahmed Aubrey case, if I'm pronouncing the guy's name, but Ahmed Aubrey. If most people are aware, he was back in, I believe on my notes here, February 23rd of 2020, where the incident occurred. There was, it was in South Georgia, Brunswick, South Georgia. There was three individuals, Travis McMichael, his father Gregory McMichael, and then a neighbor, William Bryant. So they were in this neighborhood, and where they live at, a suburb, and this Ahmed Aubrey was supposedly just jogging. Okay, they're claiming he was just jogging, even though weeks and months there had been a series of break-in burglaries in that neighborhood, and this Ahmed Aubrey had fit the description of a black youth going in and burglarizing and robbing different homes and construction sites and stuff like that. So there was reported incidents of that. So these three individuals, they saw this guy that fit the description, and so they basically got in their truck. They had their firearms with them, which is in Georgia. It's a open carrying state, so they were lawfully able to have their weapons with them, and they went to confront this black man who fit the description of, you know, a same guy that was allegedly, you know, committing different burglaries, break-ins in the area. And so when they got him, they were started, of course, questioning. And then that's where there's different stories. But then supposedly Aubrey started launching, attacking Travis McMichael, who was the son. And he, Travis McMichael, of course, defended himself, and he shot Aubrey and killed him basically instantly. William Bryant, who was a neighbor there, he had actually recorded the incident. He had his cell phone, and he was recording him and the two McMichael gentlemen going to confront this guy. And so they weren't trying to do anything illegal. They weren't trying to commit any crime. They were basically trying to find out why this person who fit the description of someone that's been breaking into the neighborhood, probably they were trying to catch them. And in Georgia, you can have a citizen's arrest. And the citizen's arrest is basically if you believe a crime has been committed or you have witnessed a crime being committed, you can detain that person. That's a lawful in the books in Georgia that a person can do that. So that's what they did. And obviously at that point, once that happened, it started making the news and media blitz. And of course, we all are very familiar of what happened. They were recently found guilty. According to from what I was looking up, they had been charged. They all have been charged for 9 counts. There was 1 count of malice murder, 4 counts of felony murder, 2 counts of aggravated assault, 1 count of false imprisonment, and 1 count of criminal attempt to commit a felony. So they threw everything they could think of against the two McMichaels, the father and son, and this Mr. Bryant, who was the neighbor. And a malice murder is basically where a person is intending to take a life of someone unlawfully. Felony murder is basically where you're committing a murder, and you might not have maybe an intent behind it, but you're nevertheless committing a murder. Aggravated assault is when you're trying to harm or injure a person using some type of deadly weapon. False imprisonment is obviously detaining a person unlawfully. And a criminal attempt to commit a felony is basically kind of a catch-all where you're intending to commit some type of felony. It doesn't have to be a murder, just intending to commit a felony. So the two McMichaels, I believe they were convicted on all those counts, and Brian, I believe, was convicted on a few of those counts. I didn't see it specifically, but ultimately they were, in a nutshell, convicted for a vast majority of those crimes, which is really a travesty because you have these three white gentlemen in their neighborhood, no criminal past. In fact, the father had been an investigator for the district attorney's office several years before that and was a former Glynn County police officer, Gregory McMichael. So these are upstanding citizens. Upstanding white citizens in Georgia who basically saw this person that was fits the description of committing a crime, and so they detained him. And unfortunately, they're now all sitting in jail for murder, and probably going to be sitting there for the rest of their life until they die. And it's really a travesty when we see, you know, white people in generally. Doing nothing wrong. They're trying to protect their neighborhoods. They're trying to protect their property. And because of the fact that they are doing something lawfully, whenever they get charged, and there's enough media blitz by the BLM crowd, the Marxist crowd, we know how the media is. The media is a Marxist organizations. They are very anti-white, anti-Christian. And so they're going to put the narrative that every black person out there is just a churchgoer, and every white person are evil white supremacists out there just trying to cause harm to innocent black people. And it's really a shame because of the fact that you have these gentlemen who were good people, very good people, and they are attempting to trying to find out why this person who's fits the description trying to commit a crime was in their neighborhood, because they were afraid that he was planning, he was staking out other places to hit. And but unfortunately they were convicted of murder.
I don't know how anybody could find that much information that short of time. I swear, because I only contacted Jason a day or two ago, and my Lord, no wonder you're a lawyer, man. You must be summa cum laude. That is incredible what you did. Before we go to a break, and we're about to go to a break, but this fellow also, this Aubrey, was there, like you said, a serial felon. Did you know he had been convicted, supposed to give him a 5-year sentence? He was found carrying a gun on school property. He was a felony shoplifter from Walmart. And hear the music. We'll go right back to that. People are going right back to Jason as soon as we get through with this break.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death, like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
This is Attorney Jason Ruff, General Counsel of the Knights Party, based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. With that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
Well, God bless all you people for holding on out there. I tell you what, I just asked Jason about a day or two, no more than 2 days ago, and he's, keep in mind, he has a full-time, very hectic calendar with his own law practice. He has 5 children that he's with every waking minute. Yet he did this research project on the fly, and look at all these facts he's dug up, and he's not even through. So when Jason gets through, my spirit son, I'm very proud of him. Hope he's not ashamed of me, but anyway, as soon as he gets through going, and what a great attorney he is and a great Christian man. When he gets through, Mark is going to ask questions, and Ryan, if we have time, we're going to try to work him in and get him some questions because I know they have plenty of them. So go ahead, Jason, my spirit son, and continue on, bro. Continue on.
Well, Sure. So you know, I thought was interesting when I was looking at some of the stuff up is that, you know, I'm always looking at, you know, what type of evidence, what type of intent, you know, they're claiming that these three gentlemen were doing, or you know, were they just, they saw a black man just running down, so, hey, let's just jump up on the pickup truck, you know, like you see in these Southern, you know, movies, you know, where, you, you know, a black guy's running down the road, and, you know, the media likes to paint the picture of, you know, three white guys just, you know, sitting and smoking or something like that, so they jump in a truck and start chasing the black guy. You know, that's kind of the narrative that the media likes to portray out there. But these three gentlemen, again, they're outside. They're working on their own homes. They see this black guy who fits this description of breaking into homes. And so they are obviously worried. They're concerned. They're concerned about themselves. They're concerned about their neighbors. And I'm sure they probably had black neighbors in that community, the town they lived in. There's about 27% of the population, I believe, is black. So there are blacks that probably live in the neighborhood, so they probably were concerned just in general the welfare of the community and their neighborhood of this guy breaking in and committing crime. So obviously they're concerned. So when I was looking this up, the 911 call said that the caller said, hey, there's a black man inside a house under construction. So someone had already reported that the Aubrey had been inside a home. There was a videotape of him inside a home under construction, walking around, looking at things. Most likely, probably maybe he was looking at you know, what was going on in there. Who knows? But the fact that he was in a place that he was not supposed to be in is still trespassing. And so he was. So a guy, some caller was concerned about the fact that this guy was in a home that was under construction. And then also when so it also reported that Gregory McMichael, who I believe is his father, he reported in his affidavit, he said, stop, we want to talk to you. So they weren't out there just going out there and say, hey, there's a black guy, let's go down, let's go shoot him. They were concerned. They wanted to talk to him, find out what was going on. And so, according to his affidavit, that's what Gregory McMichael stated in this affidavit. They wanted to talk to him. But this Aubrey, he had, I believe, a history of mental illness. I believe maybe schizophrenia. But he did have mental illness, not take his medications. Allegedly, and so obviously there was concerns. They did not know about any of that, but the fact is that you had this guy who was not acting normal, and so they obviously had every right, lawful right under Georgia law, to stop him and detain him to make sure that he wasn't trying to commit a crime, because they believed he was committing a crime. And so during the initial process, Jackie Johnson, who was the prosecutor in that year, she recused herself, and then Gregory Barnhill, who was the second prosecutor, he also recused himself, and he actually sent a letter saying that he don't believe that under Georgia law they should be charged with anything. And then this Jackie Johnson, who the first prosecutor who was charged or who recused, she ultimately lost her election, and then she was indicted for showing favoritism and affection to Gregory McMichael, and also had been charged with obstruction of justice because she told the officers not to arrest Travis McMichael that day. So they went in, even after the prosecutor, who even recused herself simply because she did not believe that there was enough evidence to charge the McMichaels, but they even went after her. I don't know what happened ultimately with her as far as her trial, but it just shows the animosity they have against anyone who's standing up for, you know, your Second Amendment right to defend yourself, to protect your home. They'll go even after, you know, the prosecutors if they believe that they should not be charged. So I thought that was really interesting.
My God, are they going to go after the jurors if they reach a not guilty verdict? My God Almighty, That is incredible. That's incredible. Are you ready for questions now, Jason? Or do you still have more?
Anytime, sure.
Okay, go ahead, Mark. You said you had some questions, brother.
Yeah, I do. You know, Jason, a couple of these are just general questions about rule of law, I guess, things that I've wondered about, not just about this trial, but a lot of others that have been very public. And that is these multiple charges that they tend to bring against people like this. As you were saying, they were charged with what, like 8 or 9 counts?
Nine counts.
I mean, why does this happen is the first part of the question. And the second part of the question is the fact that it does happen, is this not indicative of a situation where our legislatures and quote unquote legal systems have gotten out of control through a multiplication of laws that overlap each other, you know, to very great degrees in many cases, that allows the system to be able to charge people with multiple crimes like this?
Right. Well, on your first question, you know why they, you know, throw so many different charges, maybe not in this case, but in general, why they'll throw just a lot of charges or accounts against people. Well, the reason they do that, a lot of times the reason prosecutors do that is they will usually throw, you know, at least one or two charges that they are very confident that they may be able to get conviction on, okay? And then they will usually throw several other charges that they believe are weak. They believe that they probably will not be successful, but they do that for the most part because they are hoping, you know, down the road somewhere, several months, that they will get some type of plea agreement where the defendant will plead guilty to the ones that they are confident they would be successful on, and then they'll dismiss the other ones. So it's kind of like a tool that the prosecutors use to kind of force a person to try to plead guilty to a crime. And so that's why a lot of times these prosecutors will just throw, I mean, they'll throw everything underneath the sun. They'll throw the sink at them just to hopefully that they'll get a plea bargain down the road.
Yeah, casting the large net type of approach. Okay.
Right.
But, and then the other half of the question is, you know, a little bit more of a theoretical one, but, you know, is this not indicative of a legal system that's out of control with a multiplication of so many overlapping laws that allow prosecutors to be able to throw this kind of wide net against everybody that comes into their purview?
Yeah, I absolutely. I mean, as we are all well aware, I mean, most of us know that you and Eddie and myself and probably, you know, most of the listeners, I would say, most of us know, we read, we know about the early founding forefathers, the documents, English law. I mean, we know that America was built on common law. Common law has been around for hundreds and hundreds of years from going back to England. So America was founded on English law, common law. But unfortunately, what we have had for probably the past 100 years, I would say maybe a little bit further than that, is more of your statutory law. So it's not really based on common law as much, even though there's still an element of it, but now everything is on statutory law. So it's merely a fact that it doesn't matter what the law has been for hundreds of years, it's whatever the legislative session that day, that time, that year decides what a law is going to be, criminal or not. And so, unfortunately, that's where we are at in today's time is we have legislatures that pass laws for the sole purpose to make something illegal.
Well, we have to go to a quick break, and we got to go right back to that because I have a question myself, and we'll go right back to Mark and maybe Rand when he comes on. Hang on, people. You're right back.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
U.S. USA Radio News.
I'm Brad Bernards. James and Jennifer Crumbly, the parents of the teen charged in the Oxford High School shooting, were located and arrested early Saturday in Detroit after a citizen saw their vehicle and called police. Detroit Police Chief James White.
Our officers responded in a matter of minutes. When they got here, they set up a perimeter, did surveillance. We notified and activated our Metro Division, our special response team. They came out, and they were able to take the fugitives into custody.
A volcano erupted on the Indonesian island of Java on Saturday, reportedly obscuring the sun with a massive cloud of ash and sending locals into a panic. The author of the footage is heard shouting in face of this truly apocalyptic sight. This is USA Radio News.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing, and you always need to be sticking your fingers. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. You simply apply a discreet, easy-to-use sensor on your body, and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger pricks. If you test your blood sugar at least 4 times per day and inject insulin at least 3 times per day, or use an insulin pump and have private insurance, or Medicare, you might be eligible for a CGM with little or no cost to you. Call U.S. Medical Supply today for a free benefits check. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill Medicare or your insurance directly. Call now and say goodbye to finger pricks.
800-763-1954. 800-763-1954. 800-763-1954. That's 800-763-1954.
Fox's Peter Doocy asked the president if he was okay Friday.
I'm okay. I have a test every day to see a COVID test.
Later, Doocy pressed White House spokesperson Jen Psaki if he shouldn't be following his own advice and staying home from work if he is sick, or if the rules are different for him.
I can assure you that the president follows every protocol. He wants to keep everyone safe in the White House, and that's why, obviously, we consult with the doctor.
New York City religious and private school workers must get a dose of a COVID-19 vaccine by December 20th or face termination. Mayor Bill de Blasio, a Democrat, announced the new mandate this week. It's an extension of an order that applied to all public school employees. Mayor-elect Eric Adams, a Democrat, has signaled he plans to not only keep de Blasio's mandates in place, but add a new one that would require all school students to get vaccinated. This is USA Radio News.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, people, I hope you've been enjoying our debate tonight, our show. By the way, while our guys were busy really doing the show, I was working on my laptop. Yeah, I was complaining. I said, oh, it went dim and all this kind of stuff. Evidently, I traced it down. The engineer I am, I know Mark will be proud of me. He's an engineer. The light came on and says, your battery is low. I thought, I'm not supposed to be on the battery. So my cord going to my wall was not quite plugged in, though. So I know, Mark, you'll be proud of me. Can I get my engineering certificate since I figured that out?
Hey, man, it's all electricity is all sparks and magic to me.
Well, I got the sparks. Well, that's it. That's settled. I got my sparks and magic electrical certificate, 1 hour degree program I just did tonight. Well, people are going to go right.
My particular discipline of engineering deals with physical things that I can actually touch and see and handle, you know, so.
It's not Afro engineering?
No, not hardly.
I was once told that I got to get this in. It's a quick rabbit trail. My dear friend in the world, he'll be 59 years in June. I can't say his name on the show because he'd freak out if people knew I was connected to him. but anyway, he's a big time doctor. We were coming back from, it'd been brutally cold. We'd been deer hunting. I mean, it was cold, baby. Well, his defroster in his car was not working. The heater was working good. So me being certified in Afro engineering, I took my sock off, took my boot off of those sock, and I crammed the sock into where the heater vent comes out in the floorboard. I crammed that sock in there, with the logic, by FRO engineering logic, it would force that heater air, heat air, back through the defroster, and guess what? It worked. He told me that I was he told me I had to be the greatest Afro engineer of all time, and he was going to recommend me to get to Tennessee State. That's an all of traditionally black college here in Tennessee. The traditionally state, the Tennessee State honorary Afro engineering summa cum laude degree. Anyway, so well, I claim that. Anyway, people, we're going back.
Truth be told, Eddie, all of us would have to confess to at least one instance of that kind of makeshift engineering at some point in our lives.
Well, when you can't see, when you drive with the guy who had already snorted or two of Kentucky's Best and you can't see out the windshield, you got to do something. So the necessity was the mother of invention, especially when you've been nursing on the old hooch. But anyway, we got this great attorney on air. And I don't want to take up any more time from him. When we were talking about it during the break, statutory law, common law, spirit of the law, and I asked the attorney, was this statutory law and spirit of the law? I mean, I would think, if the judge had gas that day, maybe he ate chili and he had too much spirit in his guts. Maybe he would rule one way when he should. But I was asking our attorney, is statutory law and or spirit of the law, is that a way to get away from what the actual document says? Because, and I will add this before I go to the attorney. If I'm stopped out here, just say, for instance, I'm going 89 miles an hour in a 20-mile-an-hour school zone, and I get caught and go before the judge, and I say, well, you know, Your Honor, I was looking at the spirit of the law, you know, and I saw this statutory where it said, you know, if you're speeding to a school zone, if it's on an odd day, you're not guilty. I know it's an oversimplification, but I was asking the attorney, is that a way to circumvent, do a way to gradually piece, brick by brick, dismantle the Constitution? Now we're going to go back to our attorney, our expert, and let him talk about the spirit of the law, statutory law. Go ahead, Jason.
So yes, so in your question, in my opinion, it's a way. You know, not every law, obviously, you know, statutory law has an evil intent behind it, but for the most part, you know, whenever you get away from your original principle, your original common law, you're getting away from that. And so statutory law, I believe, is a way to dismember common law, our God-given rights under the Constitution, that the Constitution basically said you have, they're protected. It's nothing that the government gives you. It's something that the Constitution basically recognizes. And so these are like God-given rights that we have. And statutory laws is basically put in place in order to get away from that. That's my opinion. But then, like I was telling you, Eddie, is during the break, is that the two philosophies that we see in the court systems with judges, law students, is the philosophy of what's called original intent, where we look at what laws are created, and then we look at the Constitution. And does the Constitution allow Congress, does the Constitution allow a judge to make up rules, or do they have to look specifically to the Constitution to see if that gives them that ability to make that law? And that's what an original intent of philosophy is, and that's what most people, you want to call conservatives, you know, with a quote, or racialists, that's what they believe. They believe in the original intent of the Constitution. If it's not written in the Constitution, then laws, you know, from the federal government cannot be passed to subvert that. And then you have your other doctrine, your open doctrine, that basically liberals and your Marxists, they tend to follow, which basically means a judge can make up any law they believe is right, any right they want to give, that the judge has that inherent ability to do that, to create and make new life in the Constitution at a whim. And so those are the two debating factors and philosophies that we constantly see with judges, with legislatures, and law schools, and politicians, those doctrines. And so when you unfortunately see statues being created constantly and constantly, it is a way to make people to be easier to be convicted of or under any crime. I just for example, I have an original 1854 book statute from the state of Missouri.
It's
complete their whole law. It's about 4 or 5 inches thick. That's their whole law in the state of Missouri from 1854. Deals with everything, how the government is to be governed. It talks about interracial marriage, that it's outlawed. So it has all these things, statutes, about 4 or 5 inches. Now you look at what it is now of every state. Yeah, it can fill up a library. It fills up, you know, walls, you know. And unfortunately, we just have created so many laws that every person out there is probably guilty of something.
Well, Jason,
did y'all mention that? Go ahead, Mark.
Jason, the first thing that comes to my mind, you know, just trying to look at it from a and this is the curse of being an engineer. You know, we're taught to be mathematically, logically thinking type people. So
right.
I look at what you just explained, and I take the latter explanation, the train of thought that the Constitution and the law should be this living, breathing thing that is whatever a particular legislator or judge wants it to be at the moment. If we're going to take that side of the argument, then the automatic question that comes to my mind is, then why even have a Constitution at all? If you're not going to abide by the rules that have been laid down for how the government is to operate and what its limitations are, then what's the point of having one? It makes no sense to argue that Mr. Liberal Judge decides that today he wants to rule this way and he says that it's constitutional, and then the next time a case just like that comes before him, he rules the opposite way because he woke up on a different side of the bed that morning. You know, this is the reason why people like me complain of the fact that there is no rationality and there's definitely no justice within the U.S. legal system anymore, and it's simply because of that. It's because the rules change from day to day upon the whims of the men who happen to sit in the chairs behind the benches.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I cannot disagree with that at all. And I will say this is that I understand what you're saying about, you know, why do we even have a constitution, but I believe that is why we see such a fight going on now, and it really goes back to race. That's why we see a racial fight, because when we look about the Constitution, we understand that the Constitution was built, created, and originated by white Christians. The country was founded for white Christians. The first Immigration Act, I believe 1789, limited immigrants only if you were a white and was a Christian. Citizens
free,
were only
free, white
Christians.
Yeah.
So America
free white
was
of men of good character. Yeah.
Yeah. And absolutely. And so, but now you have the changing the racial makeup of America, where we have more non-whites here, and with their false religions and their false gods, and so we see a fight now, even the judicial system.
Jason, let's go to our last break, son. Hear the music. We got to go. This will be our last break. Wow, this has been a great show. People, hold on. We'll be right back.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee, 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
Well, my Lord, I've been having a great time. We got two Razorbacks on the night. Both Mark and Jason, both are Arkansans, and they are doing one hell of a bang-up job. We've got an established, well-established attorney, a well-established engineer. We have Rand Owen. Thinking he might call in and ask a question or two. I just texted him. So, Rand, if you're listening, brother, call on in with your questions, because I guarantee you Jason can flat answer them. But until Rand calls in, Mark, you got any more questions you'd like to fire to our attorney?
Well, I did have one other question, and then I'll let it go at that so that Rand can have a chance if he wants. But from your review, if you did have a chance to review the video that was shot by one of the three men who chased this Mr. Aubrey guy down to try to question him about his intentions, did that video clearly show that Mr. Arbery was the aggressor against the other three men?
Well, I didn't watch it the last couple of days, but I remember watching it, you know, several months ago. If I recall, you know, I remember him kind of like, they're like tossing over the shotgun, and he was like lunging towards him. And so then that's where the gun was, went off. And so I think it was a self-defense. I think they had every legitimate purpose to try to find out why he was there and why he was trying to detain him, you know. But unfortunately, it didn't go that way, you know, but in the jury.
Well, I think in today, you know, my opinion for some time has been that the ability to get a quote-unquote fair trial nowadays has basically gone the way of the dodo. It just doesn't exist anymore.
We always tell people, because I'm the general counsel of the Knights Party, and I tell people just in general that, you know, when you are a white racialist, a white nationalist, or even just a white person, you have to be extra careful in everything you do, because the very first thing, especially if you're a racialist, first thing they're going to start calling you is a white supremacist and evil, and you're automatically guilty. If you're a white supremacist, you're just a hater, you know, you already have an uphill battle. And so you gotta do everything you can to appear to, you know, be walking the fine line. You know, we try to follow, you know, the principle of Jesus. You know, be smart as a snake and harmless as a dove. Or wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove, excuse me.
Yeah.
And so that kind of approach that, you know, we have to take in everything we do. Yes, it's bad things happen to good people. Obviously, we see that all the time. It's very unfortunate. But we cannot allow things like that to deter us from our mission to still try to awaken our people. We still have a duty and an obligation. And, yes, doesn't mean that we're always going to get a fair shake of the stick, but we still have that obligation and duty to try to reach our people, because our children are depending on us.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, Jason. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's the argument that I made about the what I call the travesty of Charlottesville and the trial that Dr. Hill and the league and so many other people were caught up in through that civil lawsuit is
exactly
that they had absolutely the plaintiffs had absolutely no evidence to present to make the claims that they did. So the entire tactic of the plaintiff was to try to make Dr. Hill and the other people on the defendant's side of the argument look like bad people who deserve to pay these other innocent bystanders, you know, for daring to commit these evil acts of self-defense against these harmless, peaceful protesters, you know. So
exactly.
So that's what it all boils down to. It's the logical fallacy of the appeal to emotion, you know, and it's a fallacy for a reason. It's not a valid way to argue a point, you know.
Right.
There either has, in a court of law especially, there has to be evidence beyond a reasonable doubt to prove to 12 reasonable-minded people, and not only reasonable-minded, but fair-minded, somebody who's willing to look at the thing and see that justice is done regardless of their own personal prejudices or preconceived notions.
Exactly.
But you've got to be able to present that evidence. It's got to be able to convince the 12 people in that jury box beyond a reasonable doubt that it's true. And if it doesn't, then the verdict should come back not guilty, you know, rather than these constant kangaroo court show trials that we have now where people are crucified in the media for being quote unquote bad people because they don't have the right ideas or the right beliefs that, you know, conform with the agenda of those who control the narrative nowadays. And so simply because they're bad people, that because their ideas are out of keeping with what is socially acceptable, then they deserve what they get. You know, they deserve
exactly.
to be punished because they're bad people.
Yep, absolutely. Well, that's why I always tell people, you know, you like you said, it's all about, you know, Charlottesville. They had a First Amendment right to be there. They had a permit from a federal judge saying you have a right to hold this rally and have this permit. And even with that, they were still being charged because they went to that event to hold a First Amendment protected activity. And
the city of Charlottesville and the state of Virginia, the law enforcement agencies of those two entities, whether they liked it or not, their duty is to fulfill the law. And the law was that they should have provided adequate security at that event to make sure that there wasn't any trouble. Instead, they stood back and encouraged it to happen. You know,
absolutely.
nobody wants to argue this point in court. You know, the judge, you know, refuses to allow these kind of arguments to be made and whatnot. So it's
right.
just a complete travesty from top to bottom the way things operate nowadays. And
right.
it's one of the reasons why I have been saying for some time now that, you know, the time is coming when we're going to have to not allow ourselves to be sucked into that vortex. Because if you do, it's an automatic prison sentence.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
you know, if they're going to make you an outlaw, then play the outlaw.
And the thing is, what people have to understand is, you know, when people are out there doing, you know, First Amendment activities, I don't care if it's holding a rally or literature distribution or anything like that, you know, it's very important. The more and more we see America being balkanized, racially broken up, is people need to concentrate in your areas, in your communities are predominantly white, they're predominantly conservative, predominantly Christian oriented, because that's where our people are at. That's where our people will have a more of a tendency to listen. And maybe be converted, but these major cities that are based in third world countries, it's like a war zone in there, and so you definitely are not going to get any type of justice, any type of relief from any of these major cities. I don't care if it's in the north or south or east or west, where it's predominantly a non-white city, it's a third world city, you're not going to get any justice there. And so people need to concentrate on their activities in your rural areas as much as possible. Every situation is different, obviously, but your rural areas or white areas, Christian areas, because that's where our people at, and that's where we need to focus at. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's very unfortunate that you can get a prosecutor who can file charges against someone simply because they may be protecting themselves at a lawful event, or like the McMichaels, where they're protecting themselves under the Second Amendment. But if you have a prosecutor that has an agenda, who's looking at it from the standpoint that it's a white person, and you got blacks and the Antifa and BLM that are banging the drums to charge white people, they're going to do that because they don't want themselves to be called a racist and bigot and hater. And so it's just something that our people need to be very wise about in everything we do and activities we do, just think about those things. But you know, we can't allow that to stop us. Our blood is crucial to pass on to our children and our grandchildren. And if we just sit back and not do anything, then we are just as bad as the average white person out there who says that we don't care if our race is destroyed. And so we still have an obligation. And yes, it's going to be harder and harder down the road. There's no question about it, especially in the judicial system. But unfortunately, throughout time, we can see our Christian forefathers and Christian foremothers who have had to battle the same thing. And you know, like Jesus said, you know, take up your cross, and if you follow me, it's the same thing as today. Bad things are going to happen to good people.
Guys, we're right out of time. I wanted to go to solutions. The next time we have y'all on, I'd like y'all to have a list of solutions. My solution is, first and foremost, I think people say I'm radical. We have to recognize that we have no government. We have no representation whatsoever on the federal level. We have no law that we have what I call the Sodom of the Potomac, a bunch of pedophile, drug-dealing, Satan worshipers in Washington, D.C., that they are run by the globalists, a.k.a. out of the United Nations, out of NATO. They have no say-so whatsoever. They're just window dressing. It's up to us. And one of my solutions is, I've told people, they say it's really radical, but I'm to the point now, you have to refuse to be arrested by these thugs, because I don't consider it being arrested. I consider you being hauled off into a criminal gulag. We have to get over the fact that we can ever reform this federal system. We have to get down and operate, not even on a state level, which most of the states are even gone now. We have to start operating on a constitutional county level. Jason, we're just about out of time. Carry us off. We've probably got about a minute. So do you have any solutions real quick? I know you've already named some. Do you have any further solutions or any other comments, Jason, my son?
No, we got to be faithful. We have to be dedicated. And then we got to work locally in your white areas. And that I think we have to stress, is you got to work locally in your white areas. You're with your local officials, your local justices of the peace, your local sheriff's office, your local representatives. Local activity, I think that's where we can do a lot more of a benefit, more than on a federal level.
I couldn't have got a great mark. I think working on a federal level right now is just useless, Mark. I think we have any chance or whatsoever. What do you think? Mark, 10 seconds.
It's a fool's errand. Southern secession and independence is the answer.
That's the only answer, I think. People, y'all heard, you heard our attorney on the night. You heard Mark, our officer of the League of the South, the registry engineer. Golly, we're just having such a wonderful show tonight. I would like to thank you, Jason. Thank you, Mark. And thank you, Camber, for running the board. Thank you, all those people. And thank you, my little boy, James, for texting in. And I'll see y'all later, same time and same place next week, December the 11th. By the way, it's Pearl Harbor Week coming up Tuesday. Well, anyway, people, please pray for Blood River Radio. Pray for Liberty News Radio. God bless you. Good night. Good night, everyone.